Are you ready to create a life of balance, abundance, and joy? To live from a place of right intention and right alignment in all that you do? Then tune in right now to Living on Purpose with your host, Carolyn Romano. Living on Purpose is about standing in the center of your life so that no matter what's happening around you, you can respond from a place of peace and strength. Living on Purpose is about being deliberately aligned with the ways you're meant to serve and grow while staying open to experiencing life fully. Living on Purpose is a time for us to come together to remember our divine selves while we learn and wonder about, weigh and consider, and unpack and repack the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life.
Welcome to Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano. I'm Carolyn Romano, your host, and I'm delighted to be here with you tonight. You are listening to a Dream Vision 7 Radio Network live broadcast at AM 1510 WMEX, Boston. To learn more and for a full station schedule that includes our affiliate showtimes, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Listeners, our topic tonight is Moon Lodge, seeing strength in non-action. But first, I like to cover some housekeeping details. This show, Living on Purpose, is also aired on dreamvision7radio.com at 2 p.m. and 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Mondays and Tuesdays, as well as on other affiliates. You can find past shows at the Dream Vision 7 archive, as well as on iTunes. I invite you to please like my Facebook page. It's called Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano. You can contact me via email, carolyn@blisshealingarts.com, or via my website, blisshealingarts.com. The Dream Vision 7 Network has over 1.3 million listeners in more than 135 countries. We've got lots of great shows with new hosts joining all the time, so I invite you to have a listen. Our last show was called Whirling Rainbow, Honoring the Wholeness of Life. If Whirling Rainbow was coming into your atmosphere in the last while, it is a sign of awakening to your potential, a sign, too, that healing may be occurring in your life that allows for wholeness of the self, and that you also may be confronting parts of yourself that no longer apply to your present path. So a notion of things that served us at one time but no longer are supporting our evolution. Whirling Rainbow also signifies a time where we're allowing old identities to dissipate and a time when we look within to do battle, if you will, with the parts of ourselves that are promoting disunity, that are keeping us from feeling unity within ourselves. You can find that show, Whirling Rainbow, Honoring the Wholeness of Life, in the DreamVision7Radio.com archive. But tonight, our topic is Moon Lodge, Seeing Strength in Non-Action. First, I want to explain what a Moon Lodge is and how it was used in indigenous cultures, and then talk about the symbolism of a Moon Lodge through the Native American Sacred Path cards. So a Moon Lodge is basically an opportunity for a woman when she was on her moon or having her period to be able to retreat into a lodge, into a teepee that is set up where she can be completely supported, nurtured, cared for, and can really be in a state of non-action, right? An opportunity to really be fully in being versus being in doing. It's also a time, because of the moon, to look at one's emotions, one's dreams. It's a time where you should consider how much you need to take a break from your current circumstances. A lot of times we get into the space of yearning and we're not even sure what exactly we're yearning for. And often it's just an opportunity to stop. And when you're in a space of sort of Moon Lodge, at least according to the Native American Sacred Path cards, there can often be a lot of confusion. So if you're feeling super emotional, if your dreams are a little bit wacky, you're kind of feeling confused or overwhelmed, it's a great opportunity to say, you know what, maybe I need to kind of shift into a period of non-action and see what strength is available there. I used to work out with a trainer. I've talked about this on other shows. And she would come to my home 3 mornings a week and really put me through my paces for, you know, a good hour. And she would really encourage me to figure out when I was going to take some time off. I mean, I was really, really focused at the time on getting into the best shape possible. I was approaching my 40th birthday. And she would always say to me, recovery is when the magic happens. And to give my body that opportunity to really rest. And I think a lot of that also holds true for our hearts, for our minds, that we need to give every aspect of ourselves this opportunity to slip into a state of non-action and see the strength in that. A lot of people can't actually stop doing. I sometimes am quite guilty of that, have a bit of a workaholism issue that I struggle with, feeling the sense of urgency that I've got to serve or I've got to do, I got to keep going and keep doing and keep striving and, you know, until I arrive at some magical point, which is, of course, always a little bit further ahead into the future. But to be able to sit in non-action and allow whatever we may have been distracting ourselves from to bubble up and make itself known is a pretty powerful ability, which many of us really don't have. Or to be able to be in the Moon Lodge and receive nurturing. That's another thing that's incredibly hard for many of us, where we feel like if we let our guard down too much, we're opening ourselves up to be hurt. And so we can't really open to that nurturing, that place of allowing, that place of receptivity, really a feminine energy of opening and allowing receptivity. And instead, people see that space of vulnerability as a weakness, a weak spot in them, rather than seeing the strength that lies in being able to be open to whatever comes, to be with uncertainty in our lives, to see how things are going to unfold, you know, to stay aligned with what we're passionate about, but still be measured in some way so that we can see when we need to be making adjustments or when maybe things that we think have served us up to now no longer serve and we need to shift. And I have found, at least in my own life, that it's very hard to be able to do that if I'm always doing and striving and going. Every August, I go to Maine to a mountain camp for a week, and it's usually the time of the year that I use to really sort of evaluate the prior year and see what's coming up for me in the coming year. And it's a week that is largely about unplugging, removing myself from sort of the rat race and, you know, going to my little cabin with my puppies and sitting on the deck of the cabin and watching the lake and the water going by and the birds and the whatever is happening and just being in that space to see, how do I feel? How tired am I? Oftentimes I'm to the point of just utter exhaustion And I'm so ramped up that it'll take me the, you know, a few days of the trip to really be able to settle into that space of non-action and not be vibrating so quickly. And from that place, there is that real opportunity for an increase in self-awareness because the distractions are gone. I'm in that alone time. And just a few weeks ago, was it last weekend? We had the long weekend, and I really was able, finally, after quite a while, to sit and do not a lot and just be, you know, in the garden, be outside, just be. And what is that like for you? Are you able to get into that space of non-action and see the strength that is there versus judging yourself the entire time that you're taking taking a break and relaxing and just trying to be? Are you judging yourself for that? I had the great opportunity to spend Thursday and Friday before the weekend at a training done at Scrum, Inc. And Scrum is a term that actually I think comes from rugby, but it is being used now in business industries to describe this way of doing work, a process for doing work that allows you to do more in less time. And I know that's something that we're often all trying, you know, we're all trying to be more efficient, and we're trying to plan and you know, multitask and do all these things. But this process is so much about creating space for people to come together as a team and to focus on achieving something that's reasonable, something that's excellent. I mean, it would be called sort of an incremental bit of product, if we're thinking about it in business terms, that really this process that is so team-driven, and it's about people being able to self-organize and bring what they're most passionate about to the table in community, and how this particular process, when done right, can accelerate things like 400%. So the book, if people are interested in this, is called Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time. It's by Jeff Sutherland and J.J. Sutherland. And so in the course of kind of introducing the notion of Scrum during this training, it was actually with the author, so I felt kind of fortunate to be able to be there. He talked about this notion and showed all these charts about how innovation around the world through things like Scrum is doing things like reducing poverty around the world or creating more enterprise. And he showed this one chart that was pretty interesting about global productivity and how humanity is doing twice the work. And that made me think about how a lot of times people, at least in the metaphysical and spiritual communities, are saying, gosh, doesn't it seem like things are accelerating and things are vibrating so much faster, and what is that about? And that was like top of mind for me when I was hearing him talk about how industries all over the world are putting this Scrum process into practice, and people are actually accelerating what they're able to accomplish. And I wonder how much the way that things are actually energetically vibrating is impacting our ability to do that. All right, let me keep moving here. So thinking about this notion of Scrum and how it seems to be so team-focused also reminds me of time I spent this past week being at my women's circle, and some of our discussion revolving around how right now it's about community, that things will get accomplished moving forward by people coming together. And we're seeing some of that with everything that's been happening in the news this past week about Black Lives Matter, Police Lives Matter, and all of the pain and challenge around what's been going on and how communities are taking to the streets and rising up and being very vocal on social media channels to communicate how important it is for us to move forward together, to have common understandings, to really figure this out, because what is going on right now is really not acceptable by any stretch of the imagination. And that it really is through community that we're able to accomplish great things. There's the anthropologist Margaret Mead, who said quite a long time ago, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." And so thinking about this scrum process and how it's being applied to the world of business makes me think, like, gee, what else can we apply this to? Can we apply it to our own lives? And how many people do we need to be in a team to, you know, improve our own circumstances? Jeff Sutherland talked about how Scrum and this process is being applied in education and what it's doing for kids when they're organized into teams, and sort of opportunities for group learning emerge, and the kids can figure out who's going to work on what and how much they project they can get done during a certain amount of time, which is referred to as a sprint, and what are the impediments to getting that done, and how do we remove those impediments. And then when you get through a sprint, doing what they call a retrospective, where you say, okay, we did this sprint, we got this stuff done. How did it go? How could it have been better? How can we look to continually improve our process and feel good about our process, feel happy within the work and within the sprint, so that we continue to want to perform optimally? And there's conversation and communication that takes place that I find to be pretty inspiring or compelling, or this opportunity that's there for people to say, okay, you know, we did this, we were together, we were focused and committed, now how can we do it better the next time? And people being willing to be honest and create a safe enough place for that real conversation to take place and for things to actually improve. And then what ends up happening is that the answer to that question of, you know, how could we have done it better, moves to the top of the queue for the next sprint, the next body of work that will be tackled. One of the tasks is actually focused on perfecting that process piece or that new aspect that people want to try out. So this notion of always being able to improve the way that you're working, I think is pretty inspiring. And doing it in a way that is encouraging rather than punitive. And I think, you know, when I try to relate this back to our topic around strength in non-action, I think about the start of a sprint in this scrum process and the end of the sprint. A sprint really can't get off the ground unless you have what they call stories ready to enter the sprint. And these stories are basically chunks of work that need to get done, things that you think your customer needs or that the business needs, so that, you know, they have a high value and that you want to be able to produce value for your customer by accomplishing the work. They call that a product backlog. You don't need to know all these terms or even understand this full scrum process to appreciate the notion that you really have to be able to stop and get into a space, really, I think, of non-action or reflection to come up with the items that need to be in this product backlog and to prioritize them appropriately. We did some exercises during the training where it was very time-bound, and that pressure, I think, was a little challenging, but you had to look at everything and say, okay, you know, I mean, they were very basic tasks that needed to be completed, but in my particular role, in one of the exercises, I had to make those decisions. What was the value to the company of doing various tasks? How do I organize them, knowing that we had these short sprints coming up? And I really had to kind of drop into myself and give myself a little space to be with the backlog, to be with the plan, to be in a space where a decision could kind of come forward. So I thought that was powerful in thinking about sort of the strength that comes through a period of non-action before you get into, you know, sprinting, which certainly speaks to being quite active. And then you get to the end of your sprint and you want to sort of show other stakeholders what you've done. And then you do this retrospective that I've already described. And again, to really be effective in a retrospective, whether you're doing it for this process or anything, you need to be able to be still and really allow, now that you're free from distraction, to see what's there. Get in that space of non-action so that you can see what will make you act, what will make your whole team move forward in the process during the next sprint. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this Scrum process and the impact it had on me and the impact I think it might be able to have on you when we come back after the break. So stay tuned. I'll let Brad take a break and I'll talk to you in a few.
Living your values, looking for companions on the path. With wisdom, humor, and compassion, artist Sarah Jepson-Zitter answers many of the questions we have about living a spiritually grounded life. Check out her stunning graphic novels and designs on cards, mugs, and other cool gifts at gnomestedding.com. That's gnomestedding.com. Or call Sarah at 978-897-6239 for more information.
Donna Schatz is a licensed acupuncturist located in the Porter Square, Cambridge area of Somerville. With over 25 years of experience, Donna combines massage, acupuncture, and Reiki in her work while focusing on each client's individual needs. Contact Donna at 617-776-3065 or visit www.donnaschatz.com. That's 617-776-3065 or donnaschatz.com.
Since 2004, Old Dog Haven in Washington State has been providing loving, safe homes for senior dogs ages 8 and up who've been abandoned or are homeless at this time in their lives. Wonderful foster families take these old dogs into their homes, making their golden years happy years. For more information or to make a tax-deductible contribution, visit olddoghaven.org. Old Dog Haven, providing hope, love, and comfort for senior dogs.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show every first and third Sunday, 9 to 10 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Every first and third Sunday from 9 to 10 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Life,
We can either be bystanders or creators. Now is the time to awaken to your divine identity and the power of the I Am within to create a joyous and fulfilled life, no matter what your circumstances are. There are answers to life's big questions, and there is a spiritual path that leads to soul liberation and ascension. Join us every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Prophets for the New Age with Carl and Nancy Showalter on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Ask Dr. Love is now on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every second and fourth Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Jamie Turndorf, a.k.a. Ask Dr. Love, is a psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert who offers advice and answers to your relationship questions. Hear about Dr. Love's groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique that enables you to reconnect and make peace with a loved one. This show is for you, the listener, and Dr. Love wants to hear from you. Call 866-338-9663 or 617-237-1234.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast at AM 1510 WMEX Boston. If you're just joining us, we are in the second segment of Moon Lodge, Strength in Non-Action. And I have been taking the hour to talk about a training I went to last week to become a certified Scrum Master, pretty fancy term for basically 2 days of learning this really cool process to do twice the work in half the time. It was taught by Jeff Sutherland at Scrum, Inc. And I'm actually pretty enthralled by this process and the potential it has to help people be happy in their work. Jeff talked about a study or survey back in 2013 that was published in the New York Times Sunday Review back in May of 2014 that was called Why People Hate Work, The White Collar Salt Mine, which I just read about a moment ago, that title. I didn't pick up on that Thursday or Friday. That's pretty funny. The White Collar Salt Mine. And so this was a survey of over 12,000 workers who felt that their workplace was less than fulfilling. So they listed at pretty high percentages things that they did not have available at work. And topping the chart at 70% of respondents indicated that they didn't have regular time for creative or strategic thinking. That was followed by not having the ability to focus on one thing at a time. So those first two items that I've just listed off are possible through the Scrum process. 60% said they didn't have any opportunity to do what they most enjoyed. There was no meaning or significance to the work they were doing. They couldn't connect to the company's mission. There was no sense of community. There weren't opportunities for learning and growth or having any sort of ability to prioritize their tasks, all the way down to not being able to balance work and home life, disengage from their work, or even feel any comfort in truly being themselves. So, I don't know. I mean, I pretty much like where I'm working. I like it a lot, actually. And it is sad to me that so many of us spend so much time not liking what we're doing. And that just feels so disempowering and in opposition to why we're on the planet, you know, where we really are meant to be, first of all, experiencing joy, second of all, being connected in with our passion and what inspires us, you know, taking our, you know, the things we're best at, our personal medicine, and bringing that into the world. And here, you know, 12,000 people surveyed saying that, boy, oh boy, they are working in a white-collar salt mine. So how do we change something like that? And so what Jeff Sutherland posits in his book, Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time, as well as in this training that I attended, is that happiness is actually one of the best indicators in a business of revenue. I mean, that's pretty amazing, right? I forget which study it was, but he pointed to a study that said that happiness, quote, is a better forward predictor of revenue than most of the metrics your CFP provides. That's amazing, right? If you, like, figure out, you survey your workers and you find out that everybody's really happy, that means you're going to have a better quarter. Wow. So that then, you know, what flows from that is, gee, what do we need to do to make our workers happier? So there's a professor at Harvard, Tal Ben-Shahar, who had this very popular course in positive psychology, and he wrote a book called Happier. And in that book, he wrote, we are not rewarded for enjoying the journey itself, but for the successful completion of a journey, right? Society rewards results, not processes, arrivals, not journeys. And yet in this particular Scrum process, part of what does get rewarded, if you will, or recognized as incredibly important is really the process of Scrum. How did the sprint go? How did the team perform together? What could have been better? What were you happy about? What were you not happy about? What are we going to do next time? And so even Jeff Sutherland, whose background, you know, went to West Point and was in the service and has had a really interesting career. When he was first perfecting his ability to be a Scrum Master, even he resisted the notion that true greatness is deeply rooted in joy. And so for anyone who has listened to my show before or who knows me, I am all about these, like, universal laws and philosophical awarenesses, or I don't even know exactly how to label them, but, you know, to, so I was eating up this like convergence for me of all of these metaphysical principles with how do you do your job better? How do you sort of move through the world in a more, you know, with more velocity that still allows for non-action? So I really have just been ruminating on this all weekend. Not only how do I bring it into my workday Monday and with, you know, my team, but how do I also incorporate it into my life and the other things that I'm trying to do? Okay, so yeah, he realized that true greatness is deeply rooted in joy, and that if you can be joyful, you're taking the first step towards success. So a lot of times people think that if you experience success, you're going to be happy or you're going to be joyful. But it's really the other way around, that if you're happy, you're going to have more success. The same thing is actually true around motivation. A lot of times, I used to talk about this with teachers when I was consulting in schools, where I would explain that, you know, what the research actually shows is not that motivated kids are successful. It's that success allows kids to be motivated or provides motivation for kids. And so if you can help a child experience success, some kind of competence, no matter how small, then that experience creates motivation for a child or a young learner to show up again and put effort in. So this note, that's a parallel to what we're talking about here, that if you're feeling joyful, if you can take steps toward joy, you're also taking steps toward success. So Jeff talks about this meta-analysis that was done of over 200 studies around about happiness. It was back in 2005. And basically what came out of the meta-analysis was that happiness leads to success in nearly every domain of our lives, including marriage, health, friendship, community involvement, creativity, and in particular our jobs, careers, and businesses. Unfortunately, a lot of us think that, oh, if I just find the right partner, I'll be happy. Oh, if I can just get healthy, I'll be happy. Oh, if I just have a really rich social life and lots of friends, I'll be happy. Oh, if, you know, I can just have my creative life the way I want it, I'm going to be happy. Or if I have the perfect job or the perfect body or the perfect whatever, then I'll be happy. And really, what all of these studies are showing and indicating is that if you can find ways to be happy, that's going to lead to success in the other domains of your life. And therefore, happiness is an inside job. Okay, that went quickly. I will let Brad take us to break. And when we come back, we will tie everything up in a little bow. Talk to you in a few.
Ever feel like you're getting in your own way? Want your life to flow effortlessly? Ready to step into the fullness of who you really are? Spiral Energies can help you transform your life and manifest your highest potential so you can live a deep, rich existence. Contact Janet Kesenick at spiralenergies.com or by calling 617-926-4155. That's spiralenergies.com. 617-926-4155. Begin your transformation today.
Har- Harvard holistic psychiatrist and psychoanalyst Dr. Judy Tsafrir offers empowering astrology and tarot readings that provide insight and guidance regarding love, work, and higher purpose. For more information, call 617-965-3020 or visit bostonastrologer.com or bostontarot.com. Readings are available via phone, Skype, and in person in Newton Center, Massachusetts.
Maybe you have clear goals for your life but wish you were making more progress. Or perhaps you have no idea where you're headed, yet you still feel a sense of urgency to get there. Wherever you find yourself at this moment, consider how you will benefit from shamanic coaching with Carolyn Romano of Bliss Healing Arts in Massachusetts. This face-to-face approach works on achieving alignment on all four levels of your existence: mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical. Shamanic coaching combines traditional coaching methods with energy medicine, mind-body skill building, and shamanic techniques. The goal: to help people create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. Call Carolyn at 508-481-BLIS. That's 508-481-2547. Or visit blisshealingarts.com and get your bliss on.
Mark your calendars now to attend the Theosophical Society's 6th Annual Day of Healing and Insight on Saturday, January 14th, 2012, located at the TS on 21 Maple Street in Arlington, Massachusetts. Work with top intuitive and alternative healing professionals at a very reasonable rate. Each 25-minute session is just $20. Try energy work, intuitive readings, astrology, body work, and more. For more information and to register, visit tsboston.org. That's tsboston.org. All proceeds benefit the Theosophical Society.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
What if everything that you've been taught about who you are and what life is has been untrue? Join Debra Laval, host of Living in Quantum Love, where she'll explore and dissect the limiting beliefs and wrong understandings that have only served to keep us not only separate from one another, but from our own selves. Living in Quantum Love can be heard every third Sunday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Join Debra and take a leap to freedom.
This is Dream Vision 7 radio network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast at AM 1510 WMEX Boston. If you're just joining us, we are in the final segment of Moon Lodge, Strength in Non-Action. I've been spending the better part of our time together talking about a training I attended Thursday and Friday last week called About Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time, and the training was to become a certified Scrum Master so that I have everything I need to be able to facilitate and support teams to inspired greatness, I guess, is the long and the short of it. And so it was an incredibly powerful training because it really connected into a lot of universal truths, a lot of scientific studies, a lot of, you know, decades of having applied Scrum to various industries and seeing the results. And it's pretty powerful. And I guess to just give a little bit more context for it, the notion of this Scrum process is that you end up planning work that you need to accomplish in what is called a sprint. And that is in contrast to how industries used to plan bringing a product to market, whatever that product happened to be. It used to be sort of this waterfall method where you would identify what you wanted to build and you would research and then you would plan it, take however long that takes, then you would build it and take however long that takes and you would test it. And so that is called a waterfall method of bringing something to market, and 89% of the time that process ends up failing, yet people just continually do it. And we do it in our own lives too, right? We decide what we want to do. We do some planning. Maybe we get out, you know, paper and our journal and our calendar, and we say, okay, I'm going to accomplish this, and so I need to do this first, and then I'll do that, and everything kind of falls apart. At least that's often what happens in my life. But this notion of Scrum and doing a sprint is for you to say, okay, what, you know, operating from the stability of this team that's been put together, what can I accomplish in this period of time that is of the most value to my customer or just to the world? And who is going to do what, and how is it all going to unfold? And you look at sort of an increment of improvement or product that you can build. And then you test that very quickly. Like within that process, you're testing whether or not you're doing the right things. Because if you're not, you know, once you inspect it, you need to adapt and change it. A lot of times with that old method, by the time you got to the build and the testing, things had already changed so much that you are no longer being responsive to the market, to your customer. And I think the same is often true in our own lives, that we think that we need to be going down this certain path because we've had this goal forever and it's taking so long to do it, and I've already invested this much time, so I might as well keep going, because otherwise then it's all going to be a waste. Yet the thing that then we're going after is something that maybe no longer serves us. Maybe it would have in the moment if we had been able to accelerate our process to accomplish it a lot sooner. But now that we haven't, how difficult is it to be able to change and to make an adaptation or pivot? That's what we say in my workplace. I had that very real experience when I started law school back in the 90s. I had made it through my first year. It was probably not the best thing for me to be involved in and participating in for a variety of reasons. But when I thought about making a change, I couldn't get past the notion of, oh my gosh, I've already put in a whole year. I need to see this through. When I really often wonder what path would my life have taken if I had been able to inspect at that moment and say, eek, this is not really my bag. How do I adapt to that? So that's a pretty interesting thing to be thinking about. Another thing that came forward is, and it's related to this notion of waterfall versus sprint planning, is that I think Eisenhower said this, is that, you know, planning is essential, but plans are basically useless. So, you know, you need to put that time in up front, looking at all the angles, thinking about, okay, we could do it this way or we could do it that way, or maybe there's this other option over here. But then when you actually start to implement, you need to be able to be flexible because circumstances are always changing and evolving. And so you need to be able to put yourself in this process of inspecting and adapting. The other notion that I think is very applicable to all different parts of our lives is this notion in Scrum that you want to fail quickly so you can fix it early. And so there's a lot of emphasis put on this notion of, if you're going to fail, let's fail out of the gate here, folks, so that we then know, okay, that didn't work. What are we going to try next? Rather than thinking, you know, having a hypothesis and you build against that hypothesis and then way, way down in the plan that you must follow, we're going to test it here. And uh-oh, what if it doesn't work then? You've wasted all that time. So this notion of failing fast so you can fix early feels like a mantra that I want to really sort of get my arms around and incorporate into my life. Like, why not try a bunch of stuff even if we're not perfectly ready for it? When are we ever going to be perfectly ready for certain things? Let's just do it and see what it's like to do it when you're not feeling perfectly ready for something. I mean, that's an important experience for us to have, like to be able to jump into something when we don't have all the answers. The other notion that comes out of Scrum is this idea of change or die. I think we can all sort of understand the implications of that. And actually, that was part of a yellow medicine teaching that I got a couple of years ago. It was this, like, do or die, change or die notion of, you know, there are times when you need to act. You need to be able to read the signs and show up in a different way. Now, sometimes that way of showing up is through non-action. I can think of, in the case of addiction, that would be an example of when perhaps codependency is interfering with a person's ability to get clean, and that you really, I mean, this is almost literal. If you cannot change the way that you are contributing codependently, that person may actually die. An interesting thing to think about. Same thing, I think, a lot of times in relationships, that we need to really look at being in a space of non-action, because that's, just to round out the addiction example, sometimes you really need to be doing nothing and not intervening as your most impactful way to help a situation. Same thing in relationships, when a lot of times we end up really screwing things up because, and I have screwing things up kind of in parentheses, things go in on a path that we don't want them to go on, and so then we try to do more and more and more, or to explain more and more, you just need to see it from my perspective, and, you know, you drive too much into another person, when really, if you had kind of stepped back, something that I really practice often in my own relationships, to be in a space of non-action and allowing a person to come to their own decisions, to be in their own space of non-action so that they can know their mind and move forward the way they want to do without my trying to be too controlling, I guess is would be the most honest way to talk about that. Okay, so just in the final moments that we have together, there was information shared about the things that actually make people happy, and it turned out that those things are autonomy, the ability to control your own destiny, right, being autonomy, mastery, feeling that you're getting better at something, right? The reason that people play musical instruments is often because they see their progress and get a sense of mastery. And then the third thing is purpose, having a sense of purpose and knowing that you're serving something bigger than yourself. So if you're looking at happiness in your own life and you're wondering, gee, why don't I feel happy? You might just put yourself through an exercise of, well, am I feeling autonomous? Do I feel like I have agency or the ability to control my own destiny? Am I feeling like I'm getting better at some aspect of my life, that I'm gaining mastery in some way? And do I have a sense of purpose? Do I really feel connected into this notion that I'm serving something greater than myself? Autonomy, mastery, and purpose. All right, what else do I want to share as we bump up against the hour. Oh, this is an interesting little notion, too. Oh, you know what? No, let me talk about this. You know, we're talking about this idea of non-action. Oh, gosh, I feel like I'm out of time. All right, I'm going to save that for next time, the flash build of the sunglasses app by Nordstrom. So I'll bring that up next show. Let me just share that we've got a lot of events coming up this month, our usual shamanic journeying, our Moon Lodge, and, of course, I'm available for individual client appointments. I thank you for listening. Any questions or comments, please be in touch. Carolyn@blisshealingarts.com. Our next show is August 14th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, where our topic is Dream Time, Willingness to Become Your Vision. Tonight's show will air Monday and Tuesday at 2 p.m. and 2 a.m. at dreamvision7radio.com. Until next time, I wish you moments of grace descending. Take good care.
Thank you for tuning into Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Please join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. when we unpack and examine the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Living on Purpose is about being deliberately aligned with the ways we're meant to serve and grow, while staying open to experiencing life fully. It's about recognizing and becoming the fullest expressions of who we are. It's about envisioning the lives we're meant to be living, and then joyfully living from that end.